straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 241, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles. Duck, the Texas Longhorns are in free fall. Four straight losses, 30-7 at Iowa State. I was there with the Davis boys, and during that game, Duck, I said, man, they're too comfortable. They need a bad cop in that locker room. They need a Roy Miller. They need a Brian Arakpo. And, you know, I was thinking about it over the weekend. I said, man, I'm going to text Roy Miller. And we had a nice conversation. And guess what? We're bringing Roy Miller to you. Roy, what's shaking, man?
Not too much. Just like everybody else, I'm just trying to figure out what happened.
Well, and four losses in a row. I mean, you guys go through a whole season without, or two seasons without four losses. And it just, it's a head-scratcher, isn't it, Roy?
For sure. I mean, I just remember at one point during the season just really looking at the team, and I'm like, we are finally contenders. Like, we are going to compete. And this was right about the same time the SEC talk was bubbling up, and everybody, you know, everybody right. thinks we're in the South Conference and all that. Right. And at this time, I think we had just put up 70 points, and I was like,
okay.
Dude, we're back. Mm-hmm. We're back.
Yeah, and Roy, yeah, and when you think of Roy Miller, Duck, Roy Miller was a freshman on the 05 championship team, and he's in there. He's in there with going up against Winston Justice and Deuce Latouille and those guys up front against USC in the championship game as a baby. And quiet as is kept, Roy Miller and Brian Arakpo were members of Mack Brown's two best teams. Don't get it twisted. 08 would have worked 09 like a part-time job. That 08 team was beastly. Arakpo, Miller, Kwan, Colt, Shipley, all on the same team, got screwed out of a chance to play for the conference title after the Texas Tech loss. Roy, you told me, we were texting this weekend, and you mentioned to me that you ran scout team against NFL linemen. And that kind of got you ready for what was coming on Saturday. How important was it going up against Sinline and Stuttered and Blaylock?
It was very important. You know, it was kind of sucked because it just felt like we weren't good enough, you know, as freshmen, going against, battling against these guys every day, getting double teamed. We're getting to see the best, you know, at this time we were downhill, you know, we were in the zone option, but we were downhill, you know, smash mouth football. And so, you know, as freshmen coming in, we would have to go against these guys and inside drill. And I mean, we wore each other out. They definitely made us a lot tougher.
I mean, you look at the records, you know, Roy played 05 to 08. They lost seven games in 4 years. Seven. I mean, it's laughable now. And now, you know, they've had losing seasons. You know, Charlie Strong had three losing seasons with seven losses. So it's just, I'm sure it pains you, Roy, as an alum and as a former star player. I guess every time you see somebody, did they rib you about Texas and ask what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, it started back, you know, when I was, ever since that we, you know, Colt got knocked out the game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I'd be going to, you know, meetings at night, you know, on Saturday. You know, Saturday in the NFL, you know, everybody's kind of wearing their school shirts around the hotel, and everybody's kind of excited about their teams. And, man, I mean, just, you know, everybody loves to pick on the Longhorns. So every Saturday night, man, we go in those team meetings. They'd be like, man, what's going on with you guys, man? And it's just, you know, you get tired of hearing that. Like, hey, And the crazy thing is you get tired of it because you don't, I honestly don't know what the answer is. Right. And I've tried to rationalize, and I have my best opinions of all of that, specifically with the defense, but it's just kind of like, it really makes me, it gives me a whole nother level of respect for what Mac did while he was there, because even like moves like co-starting quarterbacks and this, like all of that stuff has an impact on your team, whether you realize it or not. Brown, I felt like he handled that, and that those weren't easy things to do with so much talent.
You know what, though, Roy, the thing that sometimes you don't appreciate it when you're in the moment. And from, I got on this beat in 2002, and Mac had it going by then. And by the time you came along, and Rack as freshman, that thing was up and running. A championship in the bag and a perennial national title contenders. I remember in 2007, you guys went 10-3, and we're writing, man, what's going on in Texas? They're slipping. They went 10-3 this year. I mean, that's how good you had it. And you were the 2008 Fiesta Bowl MVP and first team All Big 12, and you had some talented teammates. And those guys now are part of that fraternity of alumni. Who are you talking to over these last 4 weeks that you played with, and how frustrated are they? Because I know that you guys still stay in touch.
Well, you know, there's been some group chats. A couple years ago, we had conversation, we call each other and hey, man, this would never happen, da-da-da. You know, we were there and all this kind of stuff. But I don't know, man, just over the years, it just kind of became like group chats became just like one emoji, like sad face or, angry face or whatever. Like, it's just kind of like, I hate to say it, but people just they expect somehow, some way, this to take a lot more work than, just riding off into, I guess, a new era and a new sunset of championship football.
What's missing, Roy? What's missing? What's missing from this team? What do they need? Is it a bad cop? Because you famously, you and Arakpo, you would challenge your teammates. You're like, I don't know which one of you, but one of you said, I will fight everybody in here if you don't bust your ass in practice this week. Are they missing that in the locker room?
I can't speak on what's happening in the locker room today. Mm-hmm. I know that there's guys that have this new mentality, and we could talk for a while about NIL and all that kind of stuff that been introduced that I like it, but it's not good for team sports.
Wow.
So I'm kind of torn between that. But there's these guys that, I guess, I don't know how, I mean, there's social media stars, and then there's guys that, you always think, and even, as I look back, people were like, oh, I'm old school. This same talk went on kind of when we were at Texas. We just kind of found a way around. Obviously, social media wasn't as big of a presence as it is today. And for that reason, I don't know how these guys navigate through, reading all these comments about themselves and stuff like that. But it just takes a different player in today's day and age. But I think one thing that we did as a team is, Coach Brown gave us this desire to want to be the best in Texas. And he did a phenomenal job with that. And Mad Dog, prepared us in a way that we just felt like he did everything we could. And we filled in that void in between to say, hey, it doesn't matter, what Mad Dog does for us or what Coach Brown tells us. If we don't take this for ourselves and make each other stronger, tougher, like, we need to be the ones that challenge each other at the utmost high, and doing that mentally, physically, emotionally throughout the summers, all that, like, that's our training was all wrapped around it was all of those things, mental, emotional, physical, all three of those fires we tended to throughout the year. And I just felt like, you know, our guys filled in that void of the emotional, where we made each other tougher. We picked on each other. You know, we picked each other up off the ground and practice. You know, well, I remember one time, you know, this story gone around. I'm not gonna name any names, but I remember Rack, you know, end up punching somebody because he just felt like they weren't, you know, doing what they were supposed to do in practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, in workout. And it just has to come to a place where, you know, this means so much to you, and it's so above you. It's not even, it's not about, you know, your accolades. It's not about, you know, our focus was stuck on one goal. Like, there wasn't all these other goals around, you know, anybody. And D.Y., you can say Vince Young, Aaron Ross, all those guys showed us, you know, that it doesn't, like, we can be up for awards, win them, do all these things, but hey, at the end of the day, like, that is not the ultimate goal. And I think we watched that and we seen that, hey, we all are buy in and become, you know, we win together. We all win individual accolades. So we weren't focused on, I think, like, what today's kids are, so it's hard for them not to focus on individuality. It's just in front of them everywhere. So many, and NIL just took that to a whole nother level. And it's just like, guys, the transfer portal is not like, we buy in and we do what we say we're going to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to be successful. And not only that, like, you show yourself by doing these things to other teams and stuff, by jumping around team to team. And you're showing, you know, NFL teams that you're not in it for the long haul, for the hard time. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, I feel like I'm ranting about it, but I just think, guys, it's a tough world for them to navigate through. But I just think, at some point, a guy's got to look at it like, our success collectively is going to make us all individually great, draftable, and award winners.
You're right. You're right. It goes back to accountability. I think that's what you're saying, Roy. It's just, you know, y'all didn't have the NIL. Y'all didn't have transfer portal. You didn't have transfer immediately eligible that these guys faced. But that said, it still comes down to the individual person and accountability and raising each other up and challenging. And like, you say you don't know what's going on in the locker room. We don't either. We're not in the locker room. We don't know how much division or disunity there is, but it's all about it's and you were a military brat growing up and played in Killeen, so you're aware of the military and you're only as strong as the guy next to you. And I don't know, I just personally think that accountability is missing. And maybe, I don't know, said, you know, maybe players are playing too much for themselves and not for the team name on the jersey.
And you know, and I see, you know, Brian Davis asked Sarkisian, he goes, why is this team lost? And Sark goes, I disagree with that. But if you're not lost, then where are you if you just lost 30-7 to Iowa State? I mean, and Iowa State.
It's denial.
And
yes.
We were in the interview room, and we heard Sark yelling at him, you know, in the locker room, and that's fine. They needed to be yelled at, but somewhere along the line, I don't know that the message is getting through. And, Roy, I'll ask you this. After all of those games where they led in the second half by double digits and gave it up and lost four straight games, including that 28-7 lead to OU, I mean, sooner or later, that's just going to have to be a crushing effect on a young person, because as much as the coaches talk about how they're going to compartmentalize and get back in there, isn't it just human nature to just feel like, man, this is who we are. We're a team that can't close.
Yeah. I mean, especially if this is your first year coaching. You know, because the guys are trying to figure out, they're trying to trust the coach, you know, and it's, they're learning through every game, like, who we are. Like, they don't know who they are. They only know that they just need to follow coach. And so, you know, you put a couple of these games together, and now you got the team trying to figure out, hey, are we being led the right way? Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. I mean, that's unfortunate, but, I mean, that's just the way you got to earn, you know, after all the, you know, the hoorah of coming in and all that stuff, every single coach has to earn the respect of players and vice versa. And I think really great, you know, head coaches figure that out. You know, there's a lot of coaches that come in and think, hey, these guys just need to buy in and do what I tell them to do, and those guys don't last
anymore. It's a two-way street, like you said.
Yeah, it is, especially today. Like, these guys are almost – they almost have the individuality as NFL players in today's college, in the sense of the freedom to make money, the freedom to leave. You know, you kind of have to approach, you know, the old school college coaching was, you guys better buy in or else, you'll be, you know, going to work. You know, you'll be trying to figure out a new career here in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And so now it's a little different. But I think the hardest part for me is I don't understand, and who am I? I'm just a spectator fan, you know, just a guy that went there that loves the school. But I don't understand the defense. Like,
wow.
I watch these guys play, and it just doesn't seem like there's any accountability in gap schemes. And to me, when you first come in and you're a coach, and you don't have an A plus B equals C, like, guys don't know how to tackle, you know. And that's one thing I see when I watch. I'm like looking at guys running towards these defenders, and there's no clear, you know. You watch any NFL, not any NFL, most teams that play really good defense, you see three guys coming at a defender at one time. You know, outside, from both outside and then inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, force, pursuit, you know, the guy running, you chase the guy down in a field player. And when you watch defenses that don't play fundamentally gap, they don't play gap scheme defense, like, they're not responsible for each gaps, those guys don't know how to approach, like, holes and make tackles for losses. And I think that's very important if you want to stop the run, because you need negative plays. Like, negative plays automatically on first down cut down the offense's ability to convert. In the second and 12, it automatically offensive coordinators, you know, brains start going all over the place trying to figure out what to do, you know. And so that's one thing that Coach Brown was always about, getting upfield. You know, but we knew, like, I was watching the play, goal line, and I watched Murphy, you know, playing a head up on the center.
Mm-hmm.
He got a double team. The guy next to him was in the three technique, and so the guard was blocking him.
Mm-hmm.
There's a linebacker back there. He doesn't know what to do. In my mind, and in everybody, you know, you have to shoot that gap and go make the play.
Gap integrity.
And that's fundamental. But I just don't – it doesn't look like the guys are very confident in knowing
right.
where they're supposed to be. And that's frustrating to me.
Yeah. You know, that's some instant stuff, Roy. The other philosophy I always want to touch on and ask you about, Roy, is that can it be too comfortable in Austin, Texas? And you got locker rooms that are $10,000 a piece. You got this – brand new south end zone renovation, 100,000 people and luxury hotels. And it's come up before, even when Mac was here, is that whole soft image. And mm-hmm. I think you touched on it very well. You basically, college athletes are almost free agents now of sorts. Like you said, almost NFL players with freedom to make money, freedom to leave anytime they want. So do you think maybe it's a lot goes back to comfortability, and maybe some of these athletes don't have the chip on their shoulder like maybe y'all did?
Oh, man. I think about this a lot, too. It's like, and I, there can't be an issue within Texas High School Coaching Associate. Like, I don't think there's an issue there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no. I was raised by coaches that, hey, shake my hand, you know, look me in the eye, hey, boy, give me a, you know, firm handshake, you know, pick your pants up. You know, we had a, we couldn't have facial hair. That's kind of how we were raised. So we weren't necessarily just taught to be, the individuality wasn't there. So I don't know where that came from or where that's, because it just seems like guys are just so promoted. You know, I don't know if it's just like our recruiting coordinators that just blast these guys with like these edits. I don't know what it is that has these guys coming in thinking that, you know, they've made it. But
yeah,
ever since 05, it was the same. You know, that was the biggest problem I felt like that Texas was dealing with after we won the national championship. And I felt like us that were there understood like the struggle that it took to get to that point, you know. And then there were guys that came in and they felt like, you know, they were part of that. And we were just like, you know, they walked around university and they kind of benefited from, you know, they signed autographs with the team, you know, and stuff like that. But I was like, well, time out. You guys didn't do
just got here.
What we did. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it was our job to remind them, like, we're on the same team, but we're not, you know, we don't come from the same, like, mentality. Like, we didn't just sign here, you know, thinking, you know, we didn't just walk into a championship team.
Had to build
it. Y'all earned it.
And it's hard to say that because I was there a year, but I mean, we still put the work in. You know, those guys built that thing up and we came in and added to it. But what I'm saying is we watched the struggle and we watched the guys with so much humility. The guys like Vince Young, you know, Blaylock, Sinline, Stutter. These guys were great players, but the humility that they brought, the reverence that they had for the game is what we sat there and watched, and we're, you know, looking at that like we can never forget that this is how you get to that point. And then we watched guys come in year after year, and they, you know, I just feel like we felt like, you know, some of the older guys, you know, we were like, we have to get these guys on board into our mentality so that we can, you know, just continue to work, continue to grind, and that's going to be the formula for success. But I mean, Texas has been dealing with that for a long time, and it's hard to say because we were Texas guys, and a lot of us were, you know, I guess quote unquote nobodies. You know, you look at our class, you know, Jermichael Finley, Jamal Charles, you know, Henry Melton. All these guys, you know, Aaron Lewis, all these guys weren't supposed to be, Colt McCourt, weren't supposed to be anything. You know, if you really look at it, not anything, but, you know, we weren't supposed to be. And then when you look at it, you say, wow, Texas just won a national championship, but they just signed these guys? From the outside perspective, you could be thinking, what's going on? But, you know, that was just kind of our mentality was like, we're not going to be defined by any of that. And we obviously, like I said before, we were shown by the leaders and seniors, what it was going to take to take our game to the next level and to keep it a team thing.
Well, the last one for me.
I couldn't tell you, man. where that chip comes from, but it's damn sure, it's all across. I mean, I go to the NFL scouts, the NFL draft, and they'd be like, oh, man, Texas, wow, you guys are soft, man.
Oh, wow.
That's one thing me and Wright, you know, we're sitting there at the combine doing bench press, and I'm sitting there yelling at Wright, like, hey, man, you better get you a couple reps. These guys think we're soft, man. I'm yelling at him as he's throwing up his bench press. Man, it was, it's funny, you got to ask Rack about it. Rack slapped me in the face, and I went up there and That was funny. He slapped me a little bit too hard, too. I never really got to.
Rex a slapper.
And then, man, I went up there. But, yeah, I mean, everybody was just like, everybody thought we were just soft. And that was just something that always stuck with our mentality throughout the league. It's like, bro, you know, we hear that it's time to turn, you know, turn that tide.
Let me ask you this. The last one for me. Is Sarkisian the guy to get this done? What do you know about him?
Wow. I know that I don't know much about him. I know that there's some great offensive coordinators that can't be head coaches. I'm not saying that, you know, with him. I don't know.
Right.
But there's a difference between, you know, being able to, you know, commit, you know, write a play, you know where guys are supposed to be, and then sitting in front of a team trying to get them, you know, riled up and get their whole and unpack their emotional, their mind, and get them ready to play. Like, those, I've been around, you know, they, in the NFL take chances on guys left and right. You know, they, if a coach, if they got a fire coach, they'll hire somebody that they just think potentially, you know, maybe he was a great offensive coordinator, and you see it. You know, it's like, wow, you were like so detailed and great, you know, coach, you know, defensively, but, you know, when it comes to you coming around the entire team and actually, you know, getting everybody, holding everybody accountable, you know, not showing favoritism to certain guys, you know, playing time, understanding the ramifications of your choices. A lot of those guys don't, you know, that's a tough thing to do, because every decision you make, you know, you're showing guys like I don't like this, let's co-start, you know. If you're going to pull a guy, pull him, you know, play the guy that you think is the best guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that's good for competition, but I don't like the switching, because it shows your team that we're not sure, and it's weak. What, 8, 9? I don't know what week this is, but you're showing your team in the middle of the season that we don't have this together, and we didn't have it figured out. We're not confident, but we've had time to try to figure that out. Now, you know, now guys don't, you know, you got your receivers that don't know the timing of their routes. They don't know what kind of routes this guy likes to throw. You know, we it just kind of messes with the chemistry. You know, you got guys that look up to and are devoted to and tell themselves, hey, I'm going to give 100% to you, Casey or Carr. And then you switch them, and it's just kind of like, in their mind, it's just kind of like, well, time up. Like, you know, it does something. So I don't know what kind of, I don't know. I do know that it's not easy to just be a head coach, and especially at Texas. You know, you have to deal with, you know, Coach Brown, you know, a lot, you know, he had to deal with so much that looking back at it and seeing him at practice, you see him, you know, talking to different people, talking to players all the time. He'd always be writing stuff down, and he'd be like, you know, what is Coach really, you know, what is he doing, you know? And really, he was filling out the whole team. You know, he wasn't spending a whole lot of time, you know, watching the defense, watching the offense. He was writing notes about every little thing that he felt like needed to change. He'd look at people. He, you know, we got into an argument, me and Lamar Houston, one time. He was like, listen, Roy, don't ever do that again on a Friday practice. Like, we don't need that, you know, emotionally. We're trying to gain confidence on the way to Saturday. Like, we don't need that. If y'all want to do that, we can talk about that after practice. And that stuff makes sense. But you have to have great, you know, awareness of your team. You know, and I just think that Coach Brown, not only did he have that, he knew the rhetoric of Texas. You know, he knew how to tell us, you know, hey, it's all about the state of Texas. He knew by recruiting players in Texas and getting the, you know, Texas High School Coaches Association on his back, that he could have the best, you know, that he had his choice at getting the best players in Texas. And I don't know, like, those things are just not X's and O's. You know, those are, it's just a different perspective that I think young head coaches or coaches have to figure out in general. But I refuse to just give up and just think that these guys are just done. You know, I feel like we just need a steady group of guys out there, and I think we need to change our defense. And I think we obviously second half we need to pick it up. You know, I don't understand that, but I just think there's some things that we can do, and I think Coach Sharp can figure this thing out and get these guys back.
You're right about head coaching and being coordinators are two totally different animals. You know, you're 100% right on that, Roy. I mean, you look at Dave McWilliams, he was as good a defensive coordinator as this school has ever had. And, you know, then he comes here and he has three losing seasons, you know, and doesn't keep his job. Will Muschamp, to me, just a brilliant defensive coordinator. He's been a failure as a head coach at Florida and South Carolina and may never be a head coach again. It's a tough thing, and that's why they're making $5 and $6 million. But you know, the other thing too, do you keep changing head coaches? And, you know, I mean, you know, Mack Brown had 9 straight double digit winning seasons. And since 2009, there's been one double digit winning season in 12 years. And that's when they went 10-4, lost 4 games, beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. So this thing is contagious and it's spiraling, and it's going to take, I think, I agree with you, Roy. I think it's going to take the players looking each other in the eye and saying, we're tired of this crap and we're going to change it. Just like you said, Lamar Houston talking to you about a Friday practice, you know, it has to happen every day. And I just think you understand it probably better than a lot of people, Roy.
Well, definitely been through it. And definitely want to see these guys win. Sometimes I wonder, is it our expectations that, you know, as we get a head coach fired every year or two, you know, what do you guys think? Is it the fan base that is it a Del Conte? Like, what, I mean, obviously the players need to do it. They can, but I just think our fans have no patience.
Yeah. I think you guys set the bar really high, and Texas fans, I mean, you know, you went in 2005 and people are okay, we're back. And I'm like, okay, that's great. But one championship since 1970, and this isn't Tuscaloosa. This isn't Clemson. This isn't Columbus. The expectations are there, but the expectations are way overblown because it's Texas, and it's not because they put in the work since Mack Brown left. You've had two, the Charlie Strong hire turned out to be a bad hire. I really like Charlie, turned out to be a bad hire. Tom Herman won games but lost his locker room, and now you got Sarkisian, who was above average as a head coach. Great offensive coordinator. So, and I think that Pete Kwiatkowski is on a career cooler right now as the defensive coordinator. So I wrote earlier that changes need to be made in the offseason. You can't stay pat with this. And the question that CDC is going to have to ask, and Kevin Elteich, did we hire the right guy? And that's a big if.
Yes, it is, and wish we had all the answers. And I think it's you know, like plugging holes in the dike. You know, you plug one hole and something else springs up. So it's hard to know. It's frustrating, and you know, we all wish Texas was back in the glory days in the 2000s, and Roy was here, and they go 45-7 over 4 years. But kind of seems like a lifetime ago. But And Roy, we appreciate you so much, and you dropping some knowledge on us. And it's just been great fun chatting with you and reminiscing about some of the good old days, too.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Roy, thanks, man, and we'll chop it up soon. Take care.
Okay, you too.
All right, bye, Roy. Thank you.
On Second Thought.
Doug joining us via the hotline here at the Dungeon. Vic Schaefer, Texas women's basketball coach, the Longhorns crushed New Orleans 131-36 on Tuesday at Club Irwin, off to a raucous 1-0 start, and they get the defending national champion Stanford Cardinal on Sunday, 2 o'clock on ESPN. Vic, how are you today, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me this morning, guys.
Well, is the start of the season like Christmas Day for you, Vic?
Well, yeah. I mean, your kids have worked hard. We've had 28 practices. You're ready to do something other than look at each other. And, you know, you're ready to be on the same team, pulling on the same end of the rope. And so, you know, we didn't have a good exhibition, guys, to be honest with you. I was not pleased with our effort. And I've got all the reasons and excuses for that. Playing in Gregory, that right. Court has got more lines on it than, you know, a piece of paper. and it just, you know, we practiced in there one day. I mean, it's just all kinds of things. But
yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, we needed to play harder and play smarter and with more energy and effort. And so that's been a real focus for us in practice. And boy, I thought last night our kids were like piranhas on a roast, man. They were in it and really energetic and just, they just, you know, we talk about Texas fight all the time and we really like to wear that. And I thought we had all of that and then some last night. We obviously had 3-2 guards go for 60. We had a freshman go on a personal 21-point run in about a 4-minute stretch, making 7 threes. Our kids were just chomping at the bit to get out there and play, and boy, they played really well.
Well, you got 7 new faces on this team, and a couple that really got my attention on Tuesday night. First of all, your freshman point guard, Rory Harmon. I'm writing about her in today's paper. She seems wise beyond her years. She's tough from that Houston area, the suburbs where some of the best players in the country come from. And man, she took over that offense and really ran the show, particularly on defense. What did you think about her debut?
I thought it was really good. Again, I think. You know, when she's up there creating issues for the other team's point guard, you know, defensively, I think everybody behind her plays a little harder. And I just thought she was special in the press. I thought she was special in half-court defense. I'm not sure. I think she had 1 turnover.
Yeah, 8 assists, 1
and,
turnover.
So, you know, played a really clean game, but played with a lot of passion and a lot of energy. And so, I mean, look, that kid's special. There's no question. She's got a presence about her on both ends.
Yeah, there's a
lot. And again, you have to respect a kid that plays that hard. And I think everybody in the arena saw that.
Yeah, I think you'll take a ratio of 8 assists to 1 turnover most nights.
Yeah.
No question.
And you mentioned Kendall Hunter. I just went crazy with 7 threes. And
crazy.
I know she didn't play the first quarter. I don't know, was it something to do with her exhibition play, or were you just trying to work her in?
Well, I mean, we basically have tryouts every day. And, you know, I went with the big line. You know, what I think is going to be critical for us to win big games. We play Audrey at 4 a lot, but, you know, Audrey can get exposed at four if she has to go against another 6'3", you know, four player. But Audrey holds her own most nights, you know, against other teams' fours. But we saw in the South Carolina game, we've seen in the Baylor games over the years, it's just if we're going to win those games, guys, we've got to have some size at four. But I can't take Audrey off the floor, so I play her at three. I mean, she is my leading scorer after an exhibition and a close scrimmage, so I can't just put her on the bench.
Right.
She's my best defensive player, best chemistry player. I mean, so, you know, we started Deanna at five last night and Leah Moore at four. And, you know, to me, I mean, that's going to be a lineup. You can throw Lauren in there at five. And then, of course, we had the other freshman from Canada come off the bench and played really well. And all she does, guys, is gets better every day. Latasha Lattimore is going to be a monster. And she just gets better with every day of practice. Again, that's a kid that's been out with a significant injury a year ago during COVID, couldn't rehab properly. Didn't even have a knee brace when she got here. And so now every day she's coming. And, boy, I thought last night she was unbelievable. And it's just every day it's something different with her. So, you know, the answer to your question with Kendall is we have competition every day. Kendall knows I love the offense of any player. But if you're giving up the same number or – you stand out and you're not playing as hard as I want you to play, that's always something that goes into the equation, right? And so she had some educational opportunities in that exhibition game. You know, the film don't lie. And and so we watched some film of everybody. And, you know, you see what you need to do and what you need to correct.
You know, there's nothing like, you know, for me, having played the game, I was instant offense on both ends. You don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be that guy. And so you mentioned Latasha Lattimore. I mean, I watched. I was there, and she's got a little inside out to her. She's got some stretch four in her, and it's 6'4 with those long arms, Vic. That's the kind of player you were missing last year against the South Carolina when they had those big girls that were banging Audrey around. What kind of flexibility is that going to give you, especially in the Big 12 when you're going to be coming up against some bigger teams?
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. I mean, she is a stretch four. You know, I don't like anyone being a finesse player. We want to be tough, physical, and aggressive at every position. I thought, guys, last night, I thought she took an on-ball charge last night on a drive to the rim, which is encouraging for me. I get excited about that kind of stuff because I think her technique is good. Her footwork was good. I mean, it was close. It was right in front of me. And I just thought, man, I was just excited to see it. So, and then she was a great help defender as well. So, you know, we'll, keep working with her, but man, she was exciting to watch again her growth, y'all, and in just the short time she's been here. And you talk about a great kid now. You know, I've been doing this 37 years, and I can count on about two fingers, maybe one, how many times I've asked a kid, "Hey, how you doing? You enjoying, you know, Texas?" Mm-hmm. And her answer is, "Man, coach, it's amazing."
Oh, cool. Mm.
I mean, I ain't had too many student athletes describe their experience. They may say, "Oh, everything's good, coach," or "I'm good," but amazing. I mean, the kid is just, I love her to death, and just enjoy coaching her. When you say her name, she looks you dead in the eyes. When you're done, it's yes, sir. You got to love kids like that. And we got some kids like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, y'all are more athletic this year and, you know, better shooters, clearly, get to the rim. Do you like the versatility? You mentioned a little bit of how you can use Audrey. Do you like the overall versatility? And how many players you think you'll end up in your rotation? You got some depth.
Well, you're right. I guess the answer is, you know, I went into the game last night trying to get, you know, probably 9 kids ready for Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I come out of it with more than that. You know, I got more than that, you know, showing me, hey, coach, I'm ready to help. And so that's always a good thing. I mean, I think our style of play is always good to have depth. We had no depth last year.
Right.
And, you know, but yet we didn't change our style of play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, from that standpoint, I would love to have, you know, I'd love to have more depth than I know what to do with.
Sure.
if it comes in an issue for me to keep everybody happy, and hey, I welcome that challenge. So, you know, got kids really doing a good job competing. I mean, look, we had 3 2 guards go for 60. We ought to have some really good competition at 2 guard the next 3 days.
And
no
yes,
kidding.
Speaking of 2 guard, you got the venerable Joanne Allen Taylor, a senior. You had to play her at point guard some last year, but now it seems that she's going to be able to settle in at that 2. And man, she had the jumper was going last night. Very steady player. How important is her locker room presence going to be on Sunday when you guys are in Palo Alto against the defending national champions, who are returning 4 starters?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to lean heavily on her and Audrey, you know, and I can throw Lauren in there as well. I mean, those 3 have been to the wars. They've played against teams like that. It's, you know, I tried to tell them last night after the game, you know, you go in there and you're all tied up and you're nervous or you're scared. I mean, you got no chance, right? You got to go in there, and like Joe said in the press conference last night, you go into those in a game like that. First of all, nobody gives you a snowball's chance in hell of winning. And mm-hmm. I've been in a lot of the games like that, guys, in my career, and I've come out on the other side in pretty good shape. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
Why you play the game, right? You don't win or lose on paper, and so but. You got to go in there really ultra-focused. That's what Joe said last night. I love that.
It's a good
time. You go in there ultra-focused, but you got to turn it loose. I mean, you can't go in there all tied up. It's like a baseball player going to the plate, and you're guessing.
Yeah.
You know, you're guessing what the guy's throwing. Is it going to be fastball? I'm going to sit on a fastball. You get 3 straight breaking balls, and you're sitting in the dugout because you struck out. Hoping that he threw you a fastball instead of what? Reading the spin on the baseball, right?
Mm-hmm.
You react to the spin. So if you go up there all tied up, you got no chance. Same thing with us. If we go in there all tied up, it ain't going to be good. You got to go in there and turn it loose. You got to play your guts out on defense. You got to make people uncomfortable. You got to be you. We got to do us. And that's enough. And so I think our kids, I mean, it could happen. You know, we could go in there with a bunch of green tomatoes, as I call them. And, you know, we could be all tied up and nobody would, you know, criticize that at all. I mean, we have 9 players, y'all, in their first or second seasons of competition. And I 7 of them are newbies, but I throw those 2 junior college players in there too, because even though they might have played 2 years of basketball, that's a completely different level, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep,
so
absolutely.
Our experience and is just really obviously evident. So we've got to go in there and turn it loose. But I'm excited about the opportunity, excited to take them in there and take those kids in there. And you know, we'll have a real understanding of where we are after we play on Sunday.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Joanne. She just looks like a different player to me almost. Boy, she looks in shape and committed. And as you say, she's all in, isn't she?
Yeah, I mean, I just think we have a better understanding and relationship. And when I say that, it's not that we had a bad one. It's just like I said last night, man, it's hard to develop any kind of relationship with anybody if one or both always has a mask on. Mm-hmm. Man, it's just hard. You know, you don't get to know somebody. You don't get to know their attitude, their passion, their demeanor. I mean, it's just impossible. And, you know, I have so much respect and admiration for Joe. She's a, you know, mechanical engineering major, 3.7 GPA. I'm trying to get her in front of Elon Musk because he'd be crazy not to hire her. I mean, he's moving his plant here to Austin because he wants our students from the, you know, Macomb School of Business. Well, hell, he's got one of the most competitive student athletes that you can possibly have right here that's got all the experience that I would want in my locker room as an industry. I mean, who else is better fit to be competitive if that's which I'm going to assume the car industry is pretty competitive.
And she's putting her business card out there on the floor every night.
Yes, yeah. So, you know. I mean, seriously, I've been working with the president's office and we're trying to get her in front of him, but you know, that's a kid that's passionate, man. You look in her eyes in a huddle and man, I just, you know, I really love the kid. And again, she plays really hard and so I'm happy for her. And, you know, she's got some help. That's the thing. You know, there were times last year, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of help on the floor. And I think about this team this year, we've probably got a few more weapons, you know.
No kidding. So, no question.
Vic, I this is women's basketball, so I'm going to tread carefully here, but she walked into the presser Tuesday night, and I'm like, I mean, and she was never a big girl, but she looks very lean. I mean, did y'all get after her in the gym? Because she looks taller and thinner and more lithe than she did last year.
Who's this?
Joe.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I just think the kid, you know, takes good care of herself. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's a veteran, you know, and she knows what it takes. And, you know, our kids work really hard everywhere, in the weight room, on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
We do coach them, and, you know, we have a great nutritionist that deals with them, you know, from that perspective. So all that plays into, you know, a daily routine for these kids. And I think Joe is that person that, you know, really, really adheres to a strict regimen every day.
Can you talk about Kendall Hunter a little bit? And also your shooting philosophy. It seems like sometimes you kind of want your guys to pass up three, maybe for getting a better shot, not take the first three, but, so if you just kind of address your shot selection philosophy and is Kendall Hunter going to be your microwave offense this year?
I love that, Doc. I love that.
You're bringing back a great one in Vinny when you say microwave.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, yeah.
He's great.
There's a lot of people don't even know who Vinny was.
We do.
Vic, I'm going to tell you, Bill Laimbeer said it best. He goes, Vinny Johnson. And for those you don't know, he was the sixth man on the Bad Boy Pistons that won two championships. He said he's the greatest player from Baylor, greatest player to never play in an all-star game. That's the ultimate compliment right there.
Yeah. Well, you know, my philosophy on shooting is simply this. If you've proven it in practice, it doesn't bother me at that point. And, you know, Victoria Vivian's had a green light for me when she crossed half court. And you say, well, why? Well, because I've seen her make a bunch of them. You know, I watched her make a bunch of them when I was recruiting her. I saw her make them playing for me. So what everybody else would think was a bad shot a lot of times was just a shot that I was very comfortable with. So the more our guys, you know, our kids make shots, you know, the less they'll hear from me on shot selection. Now, when we're running certain things in dribble drive, I'm wanting certain things to happen before we pull it on a three. But, you know, anytime there's dribble penetration and kick, and you're wide open and got your feet, you know, Aaliyah Matharu, Kendall Hunter, Kobe, those guys have the green light, and they know that. I mean, they got to make shots for us, y'all. And, right. and that's my thing with all of them is, you know, you got to make shots. So if you're not making shots, get in the gym. Because, mm-hmm. you know, that's what we got to have from you offensively is when we do our job and you know, Audrey dribble penetrates and takes up two and kicks or Rory or Ashley and we get you a wide open look, you got to make shots for us.
That's what it's about. That's what it's about. And like I say, you've got some depth, you got some options so you better play defense if you want to stay on the floor. That's always where it's going to start with you. And we hit on Stanford a little bit, and it's a good measuring stick for you guys real early in the game. As Ted said, defending national champion, you guys come in 25th and obviously very, very hungry. Do you look at this as just an early barometer? And I know you want more than a measuring stick. You're going in for a win, don't get me wrong, but it's a big test early in the season, is it not?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a lot to ask of my team. And at the same time, you know, I just don't think we're scared. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't think our kids will be. I'll be disappointed if we are. I think we recruit the kinds of players and competitors that, you know, really want this type of challenge. This is why you came to Texas. And so, you know, for us, it's about preparation. I got to do my job as the coach the next 2 days, getting us ready for our first practice on Thursday. They're off today. And then we've got to have three great practices, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then it's an early game on Sunday. We play at noon Pacific time, which is 2 Central, you know, on a national stage. And, ESPN thinks enough of it that, number one, they ask us to play in it. Number two, they're sending arguably the number one TV crew in the country to cover it. And so, you know, we need to go in there and play well. That's, again, if we come out of there and we get beat, but we played our guts out, I'll have no problem. I got no mm-hmm. issue. I just mm-hmm. want to play hard. You know, I don't right. want to turn the ball over. I don't want to go 24 out of 43 at the free throw line and lose by 9 and you your free throws, you know, you win the game. I mean, those are hard lessons learned, y'all, that every team does that, right? They learn, oh, well, we'd have won the game if we hadn't gone 9 for 19. We lost by 6. Well, why go through? Why do you have to lose a game going 9 for 19 from the free throw? Why can't you fix that before you ever get to that mm-hmm. point? You know, I don't need to get beat 20 to, or get smacked to get my attention.
Mm-hmm.
Tell that to our kids all the time. I'm always coaching against the ghost. I'm always worried about somebody else, what somebody else might do to me, or might throw at me. So I'm constantly trying to prepare our kids for those situations. I mean, you just don't know. But for me as a coach, I'm always wanting to make sure that we don't have that life lesson or that athletic lesson. I want to prevent it, you know, from the get-go. I've got kids that love to finger roll them layups. Well, I'd hate to lose a game by 1 point and you missed a finger roll.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's just something I've always felt, and again, my job to convey that to our team.
Ted, I love coaches that remember the details and specifics, and they always remember the losses more than they do the wins.
Of course.
It just sticks in their craw.
Well, I hate losing a lot more than I like winning. And, you know, it's hard to win. I heard Coach Beard tell his group that last night. Don't ever take it for granted. And at the same time, you know, we're going to have four of these games early in non-conference, on the road, top 25 teams, national TV. Okay? This is it. So mm-hmm. what are we going to do? You know, are we going to have to get busted in the head 4 times to learn a lesson? I mean, you know, that's not it. I don't need that. You know, we're good enough to go in there and compete in all of them and win, but we're going to have to play well. And playing well entails a whole lot of things, not just one or two. Mm-hmm. So that's my job as a coach, to make sure we do it.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And you got recruiting class. You're ranked third in the country last year, and it seems like you went for a little more size, a little more depth in the front court. Is that a little bit what your philosophy was this recruiting go around, Vic?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I still haven't gotten the okay, y'all, to talk about my recruiting class this morning, even though I think all their paperwork's in. But just a general statement, I love my class. I just got a text. I can talk about Jock Alinga. So Jock Alinga's out of South Dakota. She's probably mm-hmm. She's the highest rated kid in our class. She's really right. Jumped on the scene, top 25 a year ago at the Wooten Camp in Dallas. Long, athletic, 6'2", with guard skills. Mom played at ODU for Wendy Larry. It's exciting to get her. She's on the number one volleyball team in the state of South Dakota right now. And wow. So she's in the middle of that. Really her best basketball is way in front of her, y'all. And that's what, again, I'm excited about, being able to develop her. But she is a big, long, tall wing that can really, I think, give us her along with, you know, our others. They're all 6'2", 6'3",
mm-hmm.
Players with guard skills. So I can't talk about the other two right now because there's an issue with some paperwork. But Jock Alinga is going to be. We're really excited about her, and again, her mom has done a tremendous job with her, and they're excited to be coming to Texas.
Well, it's just exciting to talk ball again, Vic. Man, I just can't tell you enough how much we appreciate you coming on. The Longhorns play the defending national champion Stanford Cardinal 2:00 Sunday on ESPN. We will be watching, Vic. Safe travels and good luck in Palo Alto.
Man, appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for your coverage. And again, appreciate your interest in our program. And we'll do it again, all right? Praise the Lord and hook them. Have a good day.
Thank you, Vic.
Take care.
Thank you, Vic. Good luck to you.
On Second Thought.
Duck. Vic Schaefer, game face 24/7. He never turns it off.
He never does. He's a joy to talk to. You and I consider our jobs a privilege and a blessing, and we have never forgotten that because, you know, I grew up son of a cotton farmer, chopping cotton, picking cotton,
mm-hmm.
and didn't want to spend my whole life on a tractor. And you and I are just blessed to have the careers that we have, and that's what Vic is. Vic brings so much. He brings joy and passion to his job, and boy, it sure shows, doesn't it?
It really does. And man, you talk about joy and passion. On Monday night, Duck, we were at the Headliners Club in a room of a couple of hundred people, and we were treated to royalty in broadcasting and the NFL. Roger Staubach and Vern Lundquist. We got to watch them speak for about an hour, and man, we talk about game face on Vic Schaefer. Roger Staubach is still very competitive at 79 years of age.
He really is. And like you say, it was mesmerizing. I mean, Vern Lundquist, the Hall of Famer in his own right, was interviewing him, and I just was mesmerized. He has always been my favorite quarterback, you know. I grew up loving the Cowboys and the New York Yankees because they were on TV. You know, Yankees were the game of the week every Saturday. They were owned by CBS for a while, and and the Cowboys were on every Sunday, and that was my team growing up. And you're right, though. I mean, he's, boy, you know, he's just, he's, what is he, about 80 now, I think?
79.
He sure had so many great stories. I don't know, what was your favorite story Monday night? I love the one where he was on the ledge on a 12th floor of a building trying to get Tex Schramm's attention, and he's on the phone. And
oh, my God.
He gave Tex Schramm a heart attack.
Oh, man. I was like, you know what? When you're young, you like that, you're indestructible. I think my favorite was him trying to explain away that he his pass to Jackie Smith in the first Super Bowl against the Steelers was a little off target. I was like, it hit him between the 8 and the 1. I don't know anything about off target. He's trying to save Jackie, you know. And Jackie,
but in fairness, you know, he said they'd put in, that was supposed to be a play on the
goal line,
inside the 3, and they were on the, what, the 11?
Mm-hmm.
So he thought, well, the whole route a little bit changed. And like he said, he didn't think Jackie was expecting it that quickly, you know, when he made his cut. But I don't know. That and Buckner between the legs stands as two of the most painful, gut-wrenching plays in sports history, because they're tagged by those plays. You hear either one of their names, and that's immediately what you think of. And Jackie was a
Hall of Fame tight end. Hall of Fame tight end, class
Buckner,
of 94.
Buckner, one of the best players, best hitters, smoothest strokes ever, yet they're known for that. And that's kind of the shame of sports, isn't it, a little bit?
Oh, yeah. You know, the Mitch Williams theory. You know, Mitch, when I say Mitch Williams, people go, oh, Joe Carter. Man, Mitch Williams was a really good power reliever, but we remember him giving up the walk-off to Joe Carter. That's what we remember him for. But the one thing, the one thing that really resonated with me with Roger Staubach was the reverence and the respect that he always got from his teammates. I mean, Thomas Hollywood Henderson was at the Headliners Club on Monday night, and he is more than once has credited Roger Staubach with saving his life. Charlie Waters, the All-Pro safety, went through a dark time in his life, and Roger Staubach came to his rescue, gave him somewhere to start, invested in his business, gave him a space to work in. So it's those kind of things. And you know, speaking of that, Duck, I asked him about those two guys. Listen up.
Hey, Roger Sitter, Golden Austin American Statesman. Your career accolades are, you know, legendary, but when I hear about your teammates talk about what you did for them off the field, Charlie Waters said you pulled him out of a dark place. Thomas Henderson said you saved his life. When they speak about you with such reverence, what does that mean to you?
Well, These are not only human beings, but they're teammates, and they're, you know, I would do anything to help. We've done a lot of, and I know this, the same guys that I've helped there, would do that for me too. So, you know, that's just a hard question, because think of the importance of other people and care about them in this crazy world. You know, this is a great country, but as you know, we didn't get it. I mean, we did not understand the evils of discrimination, and so it's a constant battle, really, to give a darn about someone other than yourself, and so that's teammates. Where that's easy to do. Thomas he's got a number of years that he's just been a great, great person that cares and helps other people. So it was easy, you know, to be involved in Thomas's life has been a real pleasure for me.
You could hear the emotion in his voice, Doug, when he was talking, because, you know, he wasn't really comfortable talking about it, because he's kind of a
right.
giver, and so for him to be so emotional all of these years later, 40 years later, and he still has an effect on his teammates. That's called greatness, and that's called legacy, Duck.
Well, you know, they gave away a football charity raising money, and one gentleman, I think, paid $10,000 for the football signed by Vern and Roger, and just said, you know, just what an honor it was. He called him a great American. You know, mm-hmm. Here's a guy that served his country in the Navy, and you just, you know, he's the all-American kid, you know. I mean, grew up and honored his commitment to Navy and served the country before, you know, he started his pro career as a Hall of Fame quarterback. And it was funny, too, that he was talking about how Gil Brandt, the talent scout for the Cowboys, tried to talk him into, see if he can get out of that commitment to the Navy. And Roger laughed and said, yeah, my mom threw him out of the house.
Wow.
He's the guy that took sacrifice and commitment and love for this country to above and beyond.
I remember the guy they wanted that bid the $10,000 on the ball. Yeah, he was like, the biggest mistake I ever made was not coming to work for you. And when he said the biggest mistake I ever made, I leaned over to you. I go, well, you mean the biggest mistake besides paying $10,000 for a football?
It's like, hey, went to a good college, went to scholarship.
It really did. And they the host, Ed Clemens, did a wonderful job. $20,000.
Ed was great.
$20,000 for those two footballs. And Roger Staubach threw those footballs to the people who bid on them. So that was really, really cool. Such a great event, yeah. Man. And I just love when legends come together, and they don't get much better than Vern Lundquist, Duck. They just don't. I mean, down to earth and funny and witty and still sharp after all of these years. I just counted it as joy. And you know what? The steak and shrimp were not bad either.
No, you're right. And I enjoyed also the conversation about the Hail Mary against Minnesota and how Roger kind of coined the phrase Hail Mary in an interview after the game. And I love how he said, and Nate Wright, you know, Drew didn't push him at all. And Vern chimes in and said, yeah, Nate flipped. So that's one of the most painful memories in Vikings history. That was the year they were supposed to win it all. So
they were good that year.
That was just so much fun and so much pleasure, and it was just fun to be with him. And that's, like I said, one of the perks of our jobs, and we don't take it for granted.
Well, real quick before we get out of here, Duck, we got to hit a little bit on Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you got fined $14,000 for walking around without a mask and lying.
Huge amount. I don't know how he's going to pay that.
I don't either. And really the Packers got docked $300,000. Which is sitting in the cookie jar in the team kitchen, I'm sure, in petty cash.
Yeah.
The NFL's afraid of the superstars. These referees and the league, they are complicit in protecting these big names. Because I'm watching the game Monday night. They flag a Chicago defensive end, Cassius Marsh, just for looking at the Steeler bench and staring him down. But Aaron Rodgers can score a touchdown in Chicago and go, I own you. I've owned you all my effing life. And not a peep from the league. And now he's walking around without a mask and lied to everybody about it and gave this half lame explanation. Goes, well, to those who may have been misled. And I thought he's going to go, well, I'm sorry. But he didn't. He goes, I stand behind everything I said. I think Aaron Rodgers might be a sociopath, Duck.
Well, he's not the most popular guy in the league, that's for sure. And I know now that he's got that huge fine, I'm just glad he's got the side gig with Jeopardy so he can afford that and still pay his rent.
Get another advance from the State Farm people who coincidentally are standing behind him on all this. The one thing I did notice on Sunday is I didn't see any State Farm commercials with Aaron in them. It was all Mahomes all day long.
Yeah, you wonder if they're going to pull those for a while or something. So, and you know, he champions himself as a rebel. You know, the way he conducts himself, you know, he loves that long hair, shaggy look, like I'm my own guy. And
not a fan.
You know, and then when Jordan Love goes out there and plays like that, you're thinking, Yeah, his ego just got an even bigger boost. Where do you think he's going to be next year? I think he might be a Steeler.
I think he is, because Big Ben's washed. Big Ben is done. He is so he's like a steak that's been on the grill for like 3 hours. He's so well done. It's not even funny. Can't throw long. Yep. Can't move anymore. And that's what made Big Ben special, Doug. He could maneuver around in that pocket as a big guy and buy a little bit of time. Now he's just a sitting duck in that
not
pocket.
Pretty.
Yeah, I really believe that is the spot for Big Ben. I mean, for Aaron Rodgers. I think Pittsburgh is perfect.
Mutual respect between him and the coach. So it just seemed like a natural landing spot. And Aaron, what has he won? One Super Bowl?
Yeah, he's won one.
Isn't that incredible? One Super Bowl. And he wants to get another before he sets down his bucket. So he's not going to a bad team. So, he's got Najee Harris in that Steeler defense. It just seemed like such a natural landing spot.
Yeah, and he can't wait to get out of there. I mean, he said he's having fun, but they're not good enough, I don't think, to come out of the NFC. I think the Rams, the Buccaneers, or what happened to the Cowboys, Duck? What happened to the Cowboys? They got blitzed by Teddy Bridgewater. What is that about?
Such an ugly game. Ugly game. I mean, they just never showed up. I mean, Dak didn't look good, dropping passes, just Teddy Bridgewater carving them up. It looked like a team that read its clippings and kind of mailed it in. Think, we're at home playing Bridgewater, no big deal. And they got it handed to them.
The Von Millerless Denver Broncos, I might add.
Yeah, yeah.
Got after him.
So, keeping your great best players.
I know. So, man, let's shut this thing down. What a great podcast today, man. All over Roy Miller, all over Vic Schaefer, all over the NFL. What more do you want from me and the Duck? Because we're giving it all to you. That will do it for episode 241 of On Second Thought. Thanks to Roy Miller. Thanks to Vic Schaefer. Thanks to Kirk's Dogs. For the Duck, Kirk Bowles, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.